the head golf coach for Michigan State University, Mark Hankins.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for coming back to the Golf Smarter podcast. It's always a pleasure to have you here, and I truly appreciate you taking the time to join us. Our podcast is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. Ultimate instructors, ultimate courses, ultimate accommodations for ultimate results. As a Golf Smarter listener, you receive a 10% discount. So go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the link to Bird Golf Academy and make sure you tell them you heard about it on the Golf Smarter podcast. Thanks for your comments about the interview with Rabbit. I know I don't always do golf lesson interviews, but that was such a fascinating opportunity, I couldn't pass it up. Our guest today was requested by Sam Rupp, a listener from Mount Pleasant, Iowa. Actually, these guys are related. But when Sam suggested the topic, I jumped all over it. We've talked about junior golf many times before, but what about the next level? College golf. Mark Hankins is the head golf coach for Michigan State University, and he's competed on the college level and professionally, so he knows his stuff. So let's get it going. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Fred.
How are you?
I'm great.
So you are the head golf coach at Michigan State, correct?
That's correct.
How long have you been doing that?
This is my eighth season now with the Spartans, and I coached 2 years at Texas Arlington before that and 3 years at Iowa State.
And so, I guess right now, the way the weather's been going, you're not playing a lot of golf.
No, it's pretty brutal outside right now, and we actually have a lot of things in place here at Michigan State that we do in the off season, such as running and lifting, working out, as well as some stretching and flexibility things with yoga.
Well, that's great. Let's talk about conditioning in the off season. That's a great place to begin.
Right. Well, you know, I think one of the major things that we encounter here in what so-called northern schools is that we need to do a little bit extra in the off season and try to get better, you know, besides playing golf. And a lot of those areas, one of them includes, you know, getting our bodies more fit to play 36 whole days. I mean, the one thing that people don't understand about college golf is that we play a lot of days that are actually 36 holes, carrying our own bag, wake up the next day and finish off with the 18. So if you're going to be out there for 10, 11, 12 hours on the golf course, you're going to need to be in pretty good shape.
So your tournaments are Saturdays and Sundays?
Usually they're a practice round on Friday, and then we'll play 36 on Saturday and 18 on Sunday.
Okay. All right. So the kids are in school most of the week, or, you know, what's... I mean, we've heard what it's like to be on a college basketball program or a college football program, which are significant at your school. What's it like to be a college golfer?
I think we probably miss the most school of any of the student athletes.
Really?
Yeah, it's really unique because we don't have an off season. First of all, we play fall and spring. We play a total of about 10 to 12 tournaments, and then it includes Big Ten championships or anybody's conference championships, and then go on to NCAA regionals and NCAA finals. So what ends up happening is a normal schedule would be we'll take off midday on, say, a Thursday, maybe miss half a day on Thursday, get to the site, and we fly to these big 15-team tournaments. These are not individual dual matches anymore. These are 15, 12, 18 teams showing up at one location, usually great golf courses. Practice round on Friday, practice the whole day, try to get used to the golf course. Saturday we play 36 from dawn till dusk, and then play the final 18 on Sunday and get back out of town, whether it be driving or flying. So you got a couple days there, and then they got to go right back to school. We also have some tournaments that are Monday, Tuesday, so we practice on Saturday, Sunday, and miss Monday and Tuesday.
How large is your team?
We usually carry about 10 guys on our team. I think college teams range anywhere from about 8 players to up to, say, Arizona has 20-some players on their team. Now, only 5 guys can play in a varsity tournament. So there's a lot of kids that wouldn't be playing if I have 20 guys on my roster. So I like to keep it a little bit smaller. There's enough room there in case someone gets sick or injured or something like that. But you know, 8, 9, 10 guys is a pretty solid number, and it goes as high as, like I said, 20, 25 at some of the schools.
And you only travel with 5?
We only travel with 5. Sometimes we'll take 6 at the conference tournament, something extremely important where if somebody hurts themselves or gets sick the night before, that we have someone to back that up.
And is this team play or is it individual play when you're in tournaments?
It's both. There's individual champions and team champions. Obviously, we're worried most about the team. 5 guys play. For each 18-hole round, we count the top 4 players, throw out the high score. Then we go into the second 18, count the top 4 scores, throw out the high number, and do the same thing on the last day. So we're getting really 4 scores the first day, 4 scores the second round, and 4 scores the third round.
And do you do both the men and the women's team?
I'm just the men's coach here at Michigan State. There are some coaches out there, very few anymore, that coach both. And that's because we recruit year-round. We work with our kids in the off-season. You know, I work 6 days a week now with my kids, doing different things and improving their skills as well as getting them in better shape.
Why did you choose to go to the college ranks versus PGA Pro at a golf course or at a golf academy?
You know, I did play when I got out of college. I played golf. Went out and played professionally for 2-3 years just strictly playing golf. Kind of filtered my way into being a golf professional. Taught golf for 3 or 4 years and then decided that wasn't for me. Had an opportunity to go back to my alma mater at Iowa State and become an assistant golf coach for men's and women's while I got my master's degree. And, you know, I've always liked the interaction between the academics, the athletics. It's a really difficult thing for most kids to do. Some do it very well and some struggle with it. I think a lot of kids are warned against the time constraints of college athletics. I mean, when you're going and it's like a 40-hour-a-week job, now throw in college, you know, academics on top of that, it's a pretty stressful lifestyle, and these kids have to be very motivated and love the game of golf a lot to put in that much time.
How many of your players get a full ride?
0.
Really?
We got a lot of people
who just went, what?
Exactly. It's not common, Fred. Certain sports, what would be called head count sports, gymnastics, football, you get a full ride or you get no ride. In my sport, I get a certain number of academic or athletic scholarships, and that's 4.5 scholarships. Now, like I said before, right now I have 9 guys on my team, so in a perfect world, everyone would get 50%. I can split it up however I feel I need to.
Okay.
So in the recruiting process, that's actually a part of the recruiting process. If you're wanted by 35 schools, I'm probably going to have to pay a little bit more to get you to come to Michigan State, unless you know, are someone that has a strong ties to Michigan State. Or if you're wanted by 3 or 4 schools and we're the best school on your list, then maybe you might come here for, you know, walk on, you know, for nothing, or maybe you come here for books. Or so there is a kind of a continuum there where the better you are, the more money you're going to get. Obviously, if you continue to perform in my program, I will continue to bump you based on your performance from year to year. But a lot of times it's basically what you come in is what you're worth, and then from there you can go upward. But normally I would never cut a kid's scholarship. They usually just go upward.
Oh, that's absolutely interesting. And the women's program has the same, well, Title IX, so everybody's equal on this?
Title IX, so they have more money, actually.
They get six
scholarships. We get 4.5.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
Oh, you must love that. Well, see,
I tell you what, it's one of those, you know, and really it's everything's trying to make up for the football.
Mm-hmm.
Football has these 80-some scholarships, and there is no women's football. So everyone else gets a little bit more on the women's side if there's a comparable sport, men's golf, women's golf, baseball, softball. You know, softball gets quite a few more scholarships than baseball does. Volleyball doesn't have a counterpart here at Michigan State, so there's no comparison. But, you know, they've tried to create some of these other sports like crew, women's rowing. There's 80, 90 girls in that sport.
So yeah,
numbers-wise, that's a good one for us because we're trying to get the numbers up equal to the 140 guys we have on our football team.
I live near water, and so there's a lot of talk for high school girls to go get into crew.
Right.
If you want to get some money out of college, go to crew.
If you're a good athlete, it's a nice way to get a scholarship.
Sure. And my son was a wrestler in high school, and you know, it was a joke trying to get to college wrestling. College wrestling programs have diminished dramatically because of that, right?
Yeah, they. I think, you know, there's stats out there that show that they've been severely affected. Wrestling's probably took it the hardest, and you know, some of the other big, like baseball, for example, too. I mean, when you're looking at a sport there where kids can either turn pro or go to school and get a 25% scholarship, a lot of kids are going to decide to go pro and maybe go straight out of high school in the professional ranks in that sport.
Going baseball pro means that they're going to be in the minor leagues for 6 years and they should have gone to college. And come on, we know what that means.
Exactly.
Get recruited out of high school, what that means to them. Well, you know, usually I ask for tips, and I may just do that, but I think the more important tips that we should be getting from you are to parents and families who have kids that are high school golfers and want to know what it takes to get recruited to play golf on the college level.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I think the greatest problem out there is just the lack of knowledge. Some of these parents that maybe didn't play college athletics or never played college golf, obviously that's 99.9% of them out there, they don't truly understand the process that their kid is going to go through or needs to go through, or some of the ways they need to get exposed to college golf coaches. And the first one I can tell you is, seems obvious, but most parents don't get there, and that is play tournament golf. And I mean any kind of tournament golf. Your local junior tournaments, your statewide high school junior tournaments, all the way up until the U.S. junior amateur. Now, obviously, the bigger tournaments they can play in, the national-level tournaments, there's going to be a lot of college golf coaches there. If your kid makes it to the U.S. junior amateur, there's going to be 100 collegiate golf coaches out there watching those kids. By the second or third day, there's about 40 kids left, and there's still like 60 coaches hanging around. So your chances are pretty good of getting recruited at that point. Then it kind of goes down another level where you're getting to the American Junior Golf Association, that the AJGA has a huge program nationwide throughout the entire summer that provides opportunities for players with somewhat of a resume. Maybe they won a couple. Maybe they won their high school state championship, or maybe they've done well locally. And then it goes down to the regional level, where you're getting some of the new tours, the FCWT, and that's the Future Collegiate World Tour. All these are online. Kids, you know, can get online, or their parents can get online, pull up junior golf, look at some of the national level tournaments, see what it takes to get into them. What I hear most, Fred, is that, you know, we don't have the money to do that. Well, if you want your child to get a scholarship, you need to do some of it. You know, there's some local qualifiers. A good example is the U.S. Junior Amateur. That's the biggest junior tournament in the country. And they'll have a local qualifier somewhere in your state. You just need to find out when it is, pay your entry fee, and they can go play in their home state. If they finish in the top two or three, they get to go to the national level. And believe me, for anybody that wants to play college golf or have their kids grow up to be golf professionals, that is the number one way to do it. And like I said, if they pull up junior golf, they're going to come across a lot of tours out there that can help them on their way.
Are you saying that playing on individual level in tournaments is more valuable to getting into a college golf program than to be on a high school golf team?
Yep.
Flat out. Boom.
Flat out. That's it.
Is that right? So you're saying that recruiting-wise, you really don't look at high school.
High school, a couple things about high school. First of all, the scores are so skewed. Some kids are playing municipal golf courses where shooting 500 par is a good number. Some people are playing great golf courses where shooting a 40 in a 9-hole match, 4 over par, is a good score. So you can't believe the numbers.
Wow.
Number two, you're getting no matchups with the top kids in the state. You've got all these states have, you know, three, four, five different levels. If you're from a small school, high school, and that just happens to be your parents' choice that you live in this small town, and you beat everyone by 10 shots, but no one's any good. I'm not so sure that shows that you can play on the national level. So I'll show you a good example. There was a kid out of Michigan 2 years ago, and he decided to play soccer instead of play high school golf because he was ranked in the top 100 in the country based on his tournament play during the summer. Okay, mm-hmm. He was recruited by everyone around the country. This kid ended up going to a nice southern school, solid golf program, and he never played one day of high school golf. So it just goes to show you most of the college coaches are out recruiting in the summertime. While the high school golf's going on, I'm running my team. We're going to, you know, out to Bandon Dunes to play in Oregon, and we're going down to play at Duke, and we're playing all these great places. I have very little time to recruit during the season, during the high school season. So summer golf is a much better avenue for these kids to go out and make a name for themselves and get ranked. That's like a new thing. You know, this ranking systems are really, kids just love to look at them, and coaches love to use them, and it's making life a lot easier as a coach to kind of whittle a kid down right away. Okay, is he 10,000th in the country? Is he 55th in the country? So,
Are there flaws in that ranking system?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
I got to believe, especially the people who is ranked 1,000th, they go, right. No, it's all wrong. I'm much better than that.
Right. Uh-oh. Well, and I tell you, one of the main things is access to these tournaments that are ranked. If you look at most of the tournaments, especially in the off season, they're all in the South. So some kid from Michigan or some kid from Iowa or some kid from Idaho or some kid, you know what I'm saying? They're not going to have the access that a kid that lives in Southern California or lives in Scottsdale, Arizona or lives in Florida. Those kids can play in ranking events every week if they wanted to. Well, they're going to have a lot better opportunity to build points, to build status, and so it is a little skewed towards the Southern kids.
Huh.
But in the same sense, it ranks every kid. Some of these rankings rank every kid in the state of Minnesota. So if I pull up year 2008 graduate Minnesota, bam, it shows me the kid that's ranked the highest. And then right on down. So, yes, it's skewed against the Northern kids, but in the same sense, all the Minnesota kids are ranked against each other. All the, you know, Ohio kids are ranked against each other. So, I mean, they use it, and the parents look at it, and the kids look at it, and, you know, we use it quite a bit now.
So the thing that sets a junior golfer, and we'll call them junior golfers before they get to college, what sets them apart is really their scores and how often and how well they compete?
Right, and I think, you know, it's one of the greatest, most fair things that you can do. Go out and play in a golf tournament. If you play well, you're going to get ranked higher. If you play poorly, you're not going to get ranked higher. It's not anybody judging you. It's you actually going out and competing against other kids in that tournament. And that's why I say national tournaments are the best ones to get recognized, because if I've only got a certain limited amount of time to go out and watch a few golf tournaments, it's going to be with the top kids in it. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to get to some local ones, but I'm going to make sure I go to that U.S. amateur, the U.S. junior amateur. I'm going to make sure that I make it to the Big Eye Insurance Youth Classic. I'm going to make sure I go to the PGA Westfield. Those are three of the biggest ones in the country, and they're national level. You qualify at your local level, go all through the steps, and if you're at that final level, you're a darn good player. And I don't care if you're 14 or if you're 18. It's amazing how there's not much difference anymore a lot of times between the 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds. A lot of times the 15-year-olds win, and you know, sometimes the 17-year-olds, you know, finish last. It's amazing how golf in general has become really, it defies age. You know, these kids, some of them are playing so much more at age 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all the way through.
What do you see as the most common mistake that a junior golfer brings to the college level and then has to compete on a college level, but they're bringing their old game with them and you've got to change what they're doing? What do you see as a common mistake there?
There's probably an overemphasis on hitting the ball far right now. And I know that's where you hear it on the weekends on the PGA Tour. You know, these guys are just bombing it down there and chipping up on the greens. But
you don't hear it on this show.
Yeah. The kids, they really To be honest, one of the things I look for when I recruit is a variety of shots around the green. If a kid's out there with his 56-degree or a 60-degree wedge hitting every shot with his 60, I'm going to assume that he didn't spend a lot of time learning how to hit other shots. He didn't spend a lot of time on the finer points of the game. Therefore, maybe doesn't even love the game of golf, because when you get to college, there is so much more on your plate. You have to take care of yourself. You don't get to go home at night to mom and dad anymore, and they're not going to take care of things. So a true love of the game in collegiate sports is paramount, because if they love it and they want to be the best, you're going to find the time to practice, and you're going to find the time to put in on your academics. If you just come in and you just happen to be a good athlete and you were good enough to get through high school and you get to college and you got one shot in your bag, and that's the lob 60-degree wedge, the hardest golf courses we play, I mean, we'll play, say, I think four of our five tournament courses this past fall were in the top 75 in the country. So you're talking about the best golf courses in the country. When you've only got one day to take a look at the golf course, you don't got all week like tour players do. You got one day to go play a practice round and then go out, play 36 holes on that hard golf course, walking with your clubs without a caddy, and then wake up the next morning and play another 18. So there better be a love of the game there to get yourself prepared week after week after week. And that shows up in their short game. It shows up in their wedge play, things like that.
My guess is they don't get a handheld GPS or anything. It's all about the notebook in their pocket.
It is. And teaching them how to create that notebook, teaching them how to map out a golf course, what things to look for out on the golf course as far as, you know, course management is so important, because you don't want your kids to make the same mistakes over and over and over again. And you want to be realistic about what their talent level is and get the most out of them, because it is a team sport for me. It is a team sport for Michigan State, for Arizona State. And if you've got one kid saving one shot, you know, you got four kids saving one shot per round, that's four shots times three rounds. 12 shots in a college tournament will take you from almost last to almost first.
Wow.
Times. It's that tight.
Tell me some of the myths about college athletes, about student athletes, that, you know, we all assume that what's going on, but when they get to when kids get there, they're blown away of how different it is than they anticipated.
I think one of the main things is, and I think anymore, the colleges do and the universities do a really good job of prepping the kids for time management. I think being independent enough to take care of yourself. I think a lot of kids come to college and they've never washed their clothes before.
Independent and mature enough.
Immature, yeah.
Kids leave home right out of high school and they've never been away. They've never even gone to summer camp or anything, and it's like they find the opportunity to break all the rules all at once.
Yep, no doubt about it. And, you know, when they get here, the one thing they realize very quickly is no one's waiting up for them when they get home. They don't even have to go home.
Yeah.
And so character, when a coach is recruiting a student athlete in any sport, character has got to be at the top of your list. There's got to be a good foundation, you know, a good family structure, or at least some support system there, not necessarily the family, but a support system that expects them and supplies them with the kind of support that they're going to need through that first year. And I can tell you, without a doubt, almost all freshmen are going to go through some sort of
insanity.
Yeah, and regret. And they want to go home a little bit. Even if they're starring on a college team, you look at some of these basketball players and they're a superstar, and all they want to do is go home and hang out at home a little bit. So it looks all fine and dandy from the outside, but these kids aren't used to putting in an extra 40 hours a week on a sport and then actually having to go to class every day, you know, whether it be two, three classes a day, whatever it is, and then be responsible at night to go back to study table, to eat on their own, to pay their own bills, to, you know, do all the things that life, you know, makes you do. And what college really teaches you is how to take care of yourself.
I think that's something that, that parents, not just adults, but parents forget about, that we just take for granted because that's what we've been doing for 10, 15, 20 years. And we forget that when a kid leaves home, it's like a shock to them.
There's no doubt about it. And you get it in different levels. And you never really know what kind of kid you have until he gets on campus. As a college golf coach, I think I know who I'm getting. And we all think we know who we're getting. But you can't tell me that, that when we were recruiting this person, that they weren't putting up their best foot forward. I mean, they were. They're showing you their best side. So you're not going to see that worst side until they get on campus. Hopefully you don't see it. Hopefully it, you've done a nice job and you've done your research and you've talked to five or six other references and talked to their high school coaches. Is he coachable? Is she coachable? And they turn out to be the kid you thought they were. Sometimes you get surprised, and they're better than you thought they were. They were very mature, and they took care of stuff on time. But then you've got the kids that you didn't see it coming. You know, they show up late for practice. They do this, they do that. They don't really love the game. Maybe they don't want to put in as much time as you thought. And then they get distracted by the great thing called, you know, the social life of college. I mean, they just every day they're surrounded by half the student body is the other, you know, the other sex, and they're like, wow, this is great. I'm at camp here for an extended period of time.
Well, it's one of my all-time favorite lines that came out of South Park. There's a time and place for everything, and that's called college.
Yeah, that's about right. And I think, you know, with most of these kids, like I said, I'm recruiting their parents. I'm recruiting their coach.
Yeah, walk me through a recruiting process of how you do it, what you have to do. It's not just, obviously, we were talking before about the scores and the tournament rankings, but there's a whole lot more to it. Take me through a process of what it takes for you to be recruiting kids.
Right. Well, first you're going to identify kids probably in their freshman or sophomore year of their careers, freshmen and sophomores in high school. A lot of times it may be their sophomore, junior year, whenever that is, but you're going to identify that person. And when you identify them, the first thing you're probably going to want to do is get a look at them. Okay, so you're going to find out through something. Maybe they sent you a resume, or maybe a friend told you, or maybe you looked in the rankings and this kid's the best kid in, you know, in California, and I'm going to go take a look at him. Once you go take a look, from my perspective, that's very important. We're all kind of looking for someone that we don't have to work with their swing so much, or they don't have some crazy funky move that it's going to take 2 years to fix, or hopefully they hit it over 250 yards. You know, length is kind of an important thing in college golf, but you don't want that kid hitting it 200 and he's maxed out his talent. You know what I'm saying? So once you identify a kid that you really like, then the whole different process starts taking place. And first of all, you cannot really contact a person until their sophomore year, and all you can send them is a questionnaire. Okay, a questionnaire basically stating, "Hey, you know, we hope you take interest in Michigan State, and could you fill out this questionnaire? And we'll get back to you your junior year," is basically what it's saying.
So when you're observing them as freshmen and sophomores, that's all you're doing is observing? You can't even have a conversation with them?
Nope, can't have a conversation with them or their parents.
But people know you're standing there and you just got to be
anonymous? That's what it is. You wear your colors. They know who you are.
Okay, so you're not being inconspicuous. They know who you
are. They know. And the other thing that always happens is that any student-athlete at any time can call me. At their own will, they can call me, and if they get a hold of me, fine. If they don't, I cannot call them back. That's still the rule. I cannot call a freshman or sophomore or junior, for that matter. Now, once they become juniors...
Do you ever answer your own phone? I've left a couple messages for you, and I have to wait for you to call me back.
You know, that's one of the things. It's very rare that someone's going to catch me.
Yeah.
Now, what you can do is basically when they get into their junior year, you can write them, you can email them, you can send them recruiting materials, but you still can't phone call. In the middle of the summer in between their junior and senior year, okay, now we're getting along the process here. You're starting to find out stuff. I can, throughout this whole process, I can pick up the phone and call their coach, though. I can call their coach when they're a freshman in high school. I say, Coach, you know, what kind of kid do you think? Okay, you know, blah, blah, blah. Talk to him about the kid. I can call his guidance counselor. I can call his high school and pull his grades. Is he even going to have a chance to get into Michigan State University? Is he even got a hope to get into Stanford? You know what I mean? I mean, so we all have different academic standards at each one of our universities. You know, what can you do to ensure that this kid's going to get into school? So I've got to go. I've got to call the guidance counselor and say, hey, can you send me the grades for, you know, Joe Black? He's a junior at your high school, and just check up and see that he's not totally failing out of high school. Because if he is, then I just drop him right there. It's over. Hmm. But you don't need that problem. If I hear one or two bad things about a kid, it's pretty much over too. Because if I'm calling his references and they're telling me he's hard to get along with, or he was immature and he's getting better, things like that, half truths usually are really bad.
You don't have time for that.
I don't have time for it. There's plenty of kids out there that are 4.0 students, good kids, good players, and depending on how good your program is, you kind of can pick and choose. Now, once you get into the senior year, then, you know, you're making phone calls to this person once a week. You're inviting them for visits, unofficial and official. If maybe you don't have much interest in them, a kid can always call me up and say, hey, Coach, I'm so-and-so, and I was wondering if I could come for an unofficial visit, just see your facilities and talk to you for an hour. Would you have time for me? Sometimes I might. Sometimes I might not. If I'm in the middle of my season, I might not have time. So we try to do what we can to encourage people to come to Michigan State, even if they aren't going to play on the golf team. I think kids get stuck thinking that there's only Division One, NCAA Division One. I mean, there is, you know, thousands and thousands of golf schools out there, and there's only 300 Division One.
Mm-hmm.
So the NCAA Division One schools that give scholarships that are high profile that you see in Golf Week, that's a small fraction of what is out there for kids. If they truly want to play golf and they have enough desire to play golf, I'm pretty certain that they can find a level that they can play at in college. And that might be the smallest level. That might be, you know, a real small junior college, or it might be a two-year college that is in some other state, you know, that maybe likes their grades, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to get in there. So there's a lot of opportunity out there, and I'm always the person that's I'm encouraging every kid that I talk to that they can play college golf, maybe not at Michigan State. You know, if we're in the top 35 in the country and we take two kids per year, all you got to do is do the math. That's not a lot of kids.
Yeah, right. And I know that a kid who wants to get to the NFL, they really need to play D1 college football to get the kind of profile that you need to do that. But to become a professional golfer, and that is a broad term in itself, because it could be a touring golfer and it could be a teaching golfer, do you need to play D1?
No.
You can play D2 and still have a successful career
playing
golf.
Play D2, you can play NAIA, you can... There's people on tour that never went to college.
Yeah.
Is it the norm? Not necessarily, but there's a lot of international kids coming over here now that play maybe 1 year of college golf, kind of, you know, decide that maybe they need to turn professional. They had a nice year, whatever. They have opportunities overseas. A lot of the international kids just choose to just turn professional. They don't even choose to go to college. So that avenue is there, too. The problem is it takes a pretty fat wallet. You know, you got to have a lot of money behind you to go out and play all these golf tournaments and qualify for the PGA Tour and, you know, fly around on somebody else's money and play golf. But college golf is really one of the training grounds for the PGA Tour. I think where some sports it isn't. We do train our kids and hope that they're going to be on tour and hope that they're going to remember where they came from and who got them there and who helped them get there. But,
are we looking for donations from Alma Mater?
We are. You know, we want to work as hard as I can for you for 4 or 5 years, and then hopefully you're going to go out and be a great star on the PGA Tour and give back. But, you know, some of that comes along with what I was saying about, you know, when you're recruiting a kid, if you recruit someone that really, if you're recruiting someone that really wants to go to your university, maybe they grew up being a huge, God forbid, a Michigan fan, and they got to go to Michigan, and they played golf for Michigan, and they became a pretty good player and maybe made it on tour, they're probably going to give back to the program. You know, they feel like they went to where they really wanted to go. So not only do we want kids to come here, we're not tricking them to come to school and play for us, or at least I'm not. I want someone that wants to be here, wants to be a part of my program. You display that for them. They come in on an official visit, probably their senior year. They might even come in on unofficial their junior year if they make the initiative. And we show them what we do in workouts. We show them all our facilities. We show them our great 36-hole complex on campus here at Michigan State. We show them our weight rooms. We show them what we do every day. Talk about our V1 video system in here. We talk about our indoor putting facility, our indoor to outdoor hitting bays. We show them the whole deal. We say, look, if you want to go play on the PGA Tour, this is the place you can get there. We can do it. We can do it together. You got to put in the hard work, but we'll provide, you know, we'll provide the schedule. We'll provide your equipment. We'll provide scholarship in some form. And basically, I'm going to take care of you and hold your hand for 4 years, and we're going to go try to win as a team and try to win team championships and things. And then when you're done with that time, hopefully you get the main objective is to get your degree. Hopefully you've gotten a lot of experience and maybe you've gotten some accolades. And if you want to go choose to play professional golf at that time, you're much more ready to play than when you came out of high school.
We frequently talk about on this show the mental aspect of golf and how important that is to help lower your scores. I would think that getting this kind of training on a college level really does enhance one's maturity out on the golf course.
No doubt about it. And that's another area that we would touch on in this time of the year. For us here in the North, we try to look at it as an advantage. We've got time here where the players don't have to be out scrutinizing their golf scores. We're working on golf swing techniques. We're working on chipping techniques. We're working on maybe refitting them for some of their clubs, trying to transition into something else. We're also trying to put them in mental golf situations once every week or once every 2 weeks where we'll have a golf psychologist come in and teach a skill.
Nice.
Whether it be breathing, whether it be relaxation. It can be the easiest of things, goal setting. If you have goals right in front of you, they're a lot easier to be motivated by than if you're saying, man, I want to be the best. That's not a very good goal. That's not a process goal. That's not anything that's going to be achieved very soon. You know, I mean, you've got to have this map to where you're going.
I want to birdie this hole. That's the kind of goal you're talking
right.
about.
We're talking process. We're talking more like, I want to, for this semester, I want to 5 times a week, I want to hit 100 putts 5 times a week for this next semester. Now, okay. That's a process goal. Yeah. That's basically, I'm not talking about outcome. I'm talking about the first part of that, I want to be a better putter. The second part is, how do you do that? I want to hit 100 putts for every day this semester. That's a pretty good process goal. Because if you can do that, find a time to hit 100 putts per day, you're going to become a better putter. I'll guarantee it. And the one thing that we try to do here at Michigan State is that if we can throw those goals up in front of your face every day and remind you, this is what we're trying to do. Even you're sick today or you're tired today, it doesn't matter. It's there. 90% is just showing up, right? That's what heard that somewhere. You know, just get there. Do it. And that's everything. That's the working out, getting in shape, going to class so you don't have to worry about school when you're playing golf. You know, you try to separate those a little bit. Taking care of your social life, making sure you're getting plenty of rest. I would say that's probably our biggest problem in college. Yeah, you know, seriously, these kids, they don't go to bed until 1, 2 in the morning, and then I get them up at 6 and run them. Sooner or later, there's going to be some fallout.
Yeah.
So getting to bed is just, it's not the top of their priority list, which I understand.
Yeah, of course. You were there.
But at the time, you know, you think you know it all, and By the time they're juniors and seniors, they have experience. They know they want to go to bed. They want to perform the next day. So
you've had some success with your program too, haven't you?
We've done well.
Tell me a couple. Hey, come on, you can brag just a touch. Please do.
Well, you know, when I arrived here, we had to make a few changes to the schedule. We had to do some things that allowed us to compete as a northern school. We kind of take it slow in the spring and build our way up. We play a lot of tournaments in the fall. We ended up kind of culminating that two years ago. We won the Big Ten Championship for the first time ever here at Michigan State. Actually, the second time ever at Michigan State, but the first time in 33 years.
Wow.
We've been to the NCAA tournament 4 out of 6 years. Had a couple individuals do very well, such as All-Americans, All-American scholars.
Come on, what about yourself? Come on.
Big Ten Coach of the Year.
There you go.
We've done pretty well, you know. And it's really the program has to be built before you can start achieving these things. And I like to think that it's built with freshmen from the ground up. Sometimes you'll get a transfer here and there, but maybe, you know, if you do your homework, get good kids. I think any coach out there will tell you, you're only as good as your kids. You're only as good as your recruit. You can't just create golfers once they get here. You got to do a good job of getting out and looking at kids, making sure they're the right person for your program. They're going to work hard, and hopefully you get lucky down the road. And they all come together at once and play well.
How is it that a school like Michigan State, which is a quality school, but you are in the northern part of the country, how do you compete with Stanford, USC, Arizona State, UCLA, you know, schools in Texas, schools in Florida that have 12-month-a-year programs and probably have a long list of awards?
Yeah, I would say probably the only, not the only, but one of the advantages they have is just in the recruiting. I mean, they tell kids mm-hmm. that, you know, this is a big deal. I can tell you it's not a big deal because what we've been talking about a little bit, and that is, each year, our kids get better, and part of that is because they have this off season to truly work on getting better, not just scoring. So we take this time to, like I said, we need to make a swing change, and you don't want to do that during competition, right? So we have this 2 or 3 month gap here where we're going to put in some work on the video room, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. We can change a swing in that amount of time, no problem. We make them better athletes when they're here. We also make sure that we schedule ourselves so that we compete when we can compete. And that means we'll compete in the fall when Michigan weather is as good as any place in the country, any place, better actually. When Florida's going through hurricanes and North Carolina's getting rained on, it's perfect.
And we're having earthquakes here in California.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's perfect. It is. It's perfect here in the fall. So we'll compete a lot in the fall. And then early spring when some of these teams get out early, we don't. You know, we'll go play little dual matches here and there and maybe go play a couple big tournaments, but we don't get too rambunctious too early. We play a lot of tournaments at the end of the spring season when our courses are in better shape and things are coming around and we're on level playing ground with everyone else. So there's little techniques, there's little things that you do, and you know, the biggest thing is for me is trying to keep our talent home. I got a kid here in Michigan that's a really good player. My whole goal is to keep him here. You know, show him that we can go to the NCAAs and he can be in the comfort of his home state where he grew up, where he became a great junior player. Stay here at home. You don't need to go down south. You don't need to go to Texas. You don't need to go to Arizona. You can come right here to Michigan State, and we're going to be ranked right with him.
Yeah, but if you can get into Stanford, you're going to send him there, right?
Yeah, it's sometimes it's tough. You know, there's certain schools that have built-in advantages.
Yeah,
there's no
course.
Doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know, but do you want to work that hard in school? Come on, Fred. Do you want to compete in the classroom, or do you really want to just be a golf pro? So I got that angle too.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a good school, but we're not going to stress you out like Stanford is or like Harvard is.
Well, and Michigan is a golf crazy state, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of golf here. The northern part of the state is resort golf courses all over the place, and these great lakes on either side of us look like oceans. And so you've got some great tournament courses along these waters. And, I mean, some really top-level golf courses around here. So, you know, our season's a little shorter. But, you know, our kids fly south. If you looked at our schedule, I can tell you right here, Next week we go to Scottsdale, Arizona for a match. Spring break, we're gone for 9 days in Phoenix. Then we go to Georgia. Then we go to Houston. And then we finally come back up a little bit farther north and play at Purdue's tournament in April. So we'll play our first four matches, and we won't even come close to being cold. So that's the advantage that we have.
You got to love the internet.
Done our homework. We've raised a little bit of money, and we travel like we need to and compete. You know, our administration supports the fact that, hey, if you can raise the money and build a winner, go do it.
Awesome.
They kind of give me the reins to do that, and that's the nice thing about it.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, I usually try to limit the length of my interviews to about 30 minutes or so, but this was just way too interesting for me, although both my, you know, I have one kid out of college, another one halfway through, and neither of them play golf anyway. But I just thought this was really fascinating. I appreciate your time.
No problem, Fred. And, you know, the one thing I would add to that is,
please,
if ever there's any questions with these parents out there and whatnot, it's never a violation. You can always go ahead and call a coach. The coach might not call you back, but you can call, you know, most of the Division I coaches out there. I don't care if it's someone that's 200 in the country. They're going to know the rules, and they're going to be able to kind of guide you in the right way. The other thing is just have your kids play tournaments. Get them out. Create opportunity for them. If they don't like it enough, then you'll probably find out. If they don't want to go out and travel and move around and stuff, then that's probably not a college golfer. If they're just playing high school golf exclusively and have no desire to give up anything for it, then you might question the fact, do they really want to play college golf? Is it worth their time? Because it is a big commitment, any sport, and I think, you know, you touched on that. Any sport in college, you're giving up quite a bit of study time. You're giving up quite a bit of socialization time. You're giving up a lot to play college athletics, and I think it's good for them. You know, it shows our grade points for our student athletes here at Michigan State is higher than the average student here that goes to Michigan State, and I think it's like that around the country. The student athletes tend to be the driven kids, and you hope they can balance the academics with the athletics. So, but don't be afraid to call. And I'll call any of the coaches out there that you know. And
well, then let me clarify something here, because frequently I'll get an email regarding one of the interviews that I did where people want to ask questions of themselves of the person I talked to.
Right.
If someone sends me an email about this conversation and they have a question for you, can I forward that to you and you'll respond to me?
No problem. Email is the best way. You know, phone numbers aren't good.
So that's breaking
unsaid,
rules.
You know, that's just not good. But email is great because there's very few rules right now on email.
Oh, and interesting.
Even if you send, it's more like me sending a letter. So if they send me an email, I can at least respond and say, okay, how old is your son? And if he's of this age, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this is the best way to go about it.
Well, then why don't they can communicate through me and I get it to you. And then if that progresses, you can go ahead and communicate with them on a one-on-one basis.
No problem.
Awesome. Mark Hankins, Michigan State University. Go Spartans. Go green.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks so much, man.
Okay, take care.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Hey, Kenny, how are you?
Good, Fred. How you doing today?
I'm doing really well. There's some interesting new products that have been coming out onto the marketplace, some revolutionary new products, and you'd like to talk about it, wouldn't you?
I absolutely would.
What do we got?
I'm excited. There's some new products coming out, some new technology, some new geometry. It's an exciting time for hard goods in the golf industry, something that has been lacking of sorts in the last couple of years.
Define geometry.
The way clubs look, you know, square drivers are coming out, triangular shaped drivers are coming out. There's a lot of technology that goes into making new golf products.
And we're talking like millions of dollars to develop a new driver head.
Oh, absolutely. So when they come to market with something, it better be good.
Yeah.
It's changed technology enough that the USGA has had to put limits on what's called moment of inertia or stability of golf clubs, which is, twisting the head at impact. So that's one of the things that I wanted to touch on today and try to get, a little more brand specific with some products that are coming out.
Okay, let's get brand specific. Which one do you want to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about the Nike Sumo driver and the Sumo Squared. They're coming out with a new family of drivers. We'll touch on the Sumo first, which is a little bit more of a traditional looking or what I call a pear-shaped driver. It's fairly rounded, but it still has what's called a higher moment of inertia. The USGA came out and put restrictions on moment of inertia at 5,700. And the new Nike Sumo driver has a high moment of inertia of about 4,950. What that means is if you hit the ball towards the heel or the toe of the golf club, you're going to have less twisting. They don't have moment of inertia restrictions on if you hit it towards the bottom and the club twists down, or you hit it towards the top and the club twists up. Basically, if you hit it towards the top, you're going to add loft, and if you hit it towards the bottom, you're going to de-loft a driver. But what they're trying to do is put restrictions on how much the club twists on off-center hits towards the heel and the toe. And in essence, what that's going to do is it's going to make the golf club more playable for anybody out there, really. If you put hitting tape on a golf club and you hit golf balls with it, you're going to see that you're not going to hit it on the sweet spot every time. Nobody does, and the average golfer definitely doesn't. So what they're doing is they're able to keep the ball in play more, so you're able to play off the short grass a lot more often. And Nike, as well as other manufacturers out there, but when they developed this line, they knew that not everybody is going to be comfortable looking at a square driver. So they've created two golf clubs. They've got one that looks more traditional in the Sumo, and then they have the Sumo Squared, which actually looks like a square driver for the most part, but it also offers one of the highest moment of inertias that are available. I believe that one's around 5,200. It's from a traditional standpoint, if you look at the bottom of the golf club, it looks extremely square. They did a great job, on the top of the golf club with adding color schemes to make it appear as though it's rounded. But at the same time, the golf club is fairly square. From a technology standpoint, incredible golf club. It's going to give the average guy a lot more chances of playing from the short grass. It has a low center of gravity, which helps get the ball airborne, and an extremely high moment of inertia.
Kenny, would you say that most purchases of golf clubs are, I don't want to use the word impulsive, but I'm trying to think of something better way to do it. I mean, that most people who buy golf clubs don't get themselves fitted. They just go on the name brand or the price, or do people really do a lot of research before they purchase a club?
Well, with the day of the internet, it's changed a lot. Before that, people just basically bought off the impulse. Now they take a lot of time in buying products. If you have the opportunity to get fitted, so that we've talked about this in shows in the past, and that's the best way to do it. There's a certain launch angle you want to be at, and there's a certain spin rate that you want to be at. If you're not afforded that luxury, you're at a little bit of a disadvantage, but for the most part, they try to keep technology the same as far as loft and stiffness and torque and things of that nature. But, if you're afforded the luxury to get fitted, that is the absolute best way to do that.
So how important, and I know that if they're spending millions of dollars to design moment of inertia and the technical aspects of a golf club, what about the visual and the audio or oral the sound aspects of a golf club? I mean, here they're taking a huge chance on creating a driver that is so out of the ordinary visually. And then what about the importance of the sound of it when you hit it? I mean, people obviously had to get used to the sound of what titanium drivers or the metal drivers from the wood.
Right, and since they introduced titanium years ago, that sound changed with regular stainless steel. It was a little bit deeper sound. Now you've got, fairly loud sounds coming off the drivers. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now that, the square-headed drivers that are out now do produce an extremely loud, high-pitched sound. And for some, that's what they're looking for, like an explosion off the club face. When you hit it, you definitely know you know, by the sound of the golf club that you've hit it good. If you're on the driving range, people are going to pay attention and be like, what on earth is that? you know, so to some, that's great. You know, to some might not like it. There have been great golf clubs introduced in the past, in particular composite, when they used composite face and crown golf clubs. So, you know what I mean by filament wound or graphite. You know, it was a very, very dull sound. It was more sounded more like persimmon. The golf club performed great, but at the same time, they weren't producing a sound that the player could relate to distance. And with these golf clubs, if you're looking for sound to equate to distance, you've got it in this golf club.
All right. Well, it's interesting to see, you know, they're taking such a big chance to see what happens. We hope it's not an Edsel. We hope that this is the kind of thing that explodes off the marketplace for them.
Well, there's, you know,
and Nike's not the only one that's coming out with this.
Yeah, I know. For every manufacturer to step outside of the box and do something with it, they all have their own theory on, you know, how's the best way to make this. You know, Titleist has it, Tour Edge has it, Callaway has it, Cobra has it. You know, everybody has it. It's not just a marketing ploy to try to get new products out there. You know, there's definitely some technological advances, and everybody's taking notice, and everybody's making something that has a high moment of inertia.
And Nike is a really high-profile company that is fairly new to the golf industry, aren't they?
They are fairly new to the golf industry. Tom Stikes, who develops their products, has been in the golf business for longer than I can remember. He's the brains behind most of the new Nike products that come to market, and you know he's made golf clubs for some of the world's greatest golfers of all time. So they're new to the market. Tom is not new to the market. So
okay. Okay, so their credibility is there. And
absolutely.
The fact that they have Tiger and Michelle, I mean, like two of the biggest
KJ Choi. I mean, they've got players out there that use these products. Tiger doesn't use the Sumo Square driver, but, you know, KJ Choi is one with it. Michelle Wee plays the product. I mean, they have the players in their arsenal, you know, to tell you that their brand is every bit the brand that anybody else is.
And that sells product.
It does sell product. Not as much as you would think. It's great
really?
To have those people out there playing your products, obviously, when you got the number one player in the world. But at the same time, you do have consumers that try products, and they're going to tell their buddy, hey, look, I either didn't like it or I did like it. And that's going to bode well for them as well.
Interesting. Very interesting. And how about those Sonar Tech fairway woods? Those are great clubs, huh?
To me, they're awesome.
Well,
I play them. So.
That's why we're giving one away. This week is the second week of our announcement of the Sonar Tech GS Tour Fairway Wood, and you'll have your choice when you win of 3, 5, 7 wood, right? Right-handed, left-handed?
That is correct. Flex, right-hand, left-hand, it doesn't matter. We'll be able to accommodate whatever they want.
That's really awesome. So if you want to win this GS Tour Fairway Wood, please send an email with the subject Sonar Tech to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com, and please, in the subject, put Sonar Tech. And you can spell it however you want. Let's see what we can come up with. Make sure you include your name and mailing or shipping address so that we know where we can send the prize to you when you win. For more information, check the show notes, and the deadline for entry is midnight, February 19th, and the winner will be announced in the program on February 20th. Kenny, that's it for today. Thanks so much for your review and the information on the new Nike Sumo and Sumo Square drivers.
Sounds good. Thanks, Fred.
Okay, now before we go to our quote, I wanted to remind you again that if you're looking for an effective diet, or if you have or know somebody who has diabetes, our newest podcast is called The New Glucose Revolution Podcast, and it's now available at iTunes. The New Glucose Revolution is based on the glycemic index, the GI, and you've been hearing a lot about that one recently. It's a tool to help you figure out what carbs you should eat. Our second episode is now available, and it's an interview with Dr. Jenny Brand-Miller, co-author of the book and the world's authority on the GI. She offers practical tips for using the GI to eat well, lose weight, cook for kids, and most importantly, manage diabetes. But you don't have to be a diabetic to do this diet. As we launch more programs and our new website becomes active, I'll let you know of what we've got to offer. And always, I would love to get any feedback that you have. Thanks. This week's closing quote comes from Juan Gutierrez of Tampa, Florida. Juan is always sending me emails and quotes and suggestions, and I really appreciate the communication. And he had a great one. It just cracked me up when I read this. Golf. You hit down to make the ball go up. You swing left and the ball goes right. The lowest score wins. And on top of all that, the winner buys the drinks? Please send your quotes, your comments, suggestions, and your requests to Fred at GolfSmarterPodcast.com.